Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Wednesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. on WGXE 90.7 FM.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today's guest is WGXE's station manager, Lynn Sloniker. Lynn was born in Braddock, Pennsylvania, the oldest of three girls. She graduated from Carnegie Mellon University with a bachelor's in fine art. Lynn has been married to her husband, Stephen Corbar, for 24 years, with whom she has two sons, Bryce and Ogden. Lynn is a classically trained musician and has played in a number of small orchestras as well as taught music on and off for years. Her past jobs include being a paralegal as well as a reporter, writer and editor for publications such as Cobblestone Publishing and Yankee Magazine. She has also contributed articles to the Register Star and the Independent, which is the predecessor of the Columbia paper. Lynn has a blog entitled Unmuffled, where she writes about educational issues, particularly focusing on stories relating to the Hudson City School District. Formerly, Lynn was an elected member of the Hudson City Democrats and served as a mayoral appointee to the Columbia Opportunities Board of Directors. She moved to Hudson in 2001 and has been with WGXC's station manager since 2012. Lynn, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thanks for coming, Lynn.
Thank you.
Excellent. Now, Lynn, a number of questions. There seems to be a lot going on here. First and foremost, what instrument do you play?
Oboe.
Oboe, right. And do you play it very well?
Well, I used to. I don't play as much. Well, I don't play at all anymore, but...
Why?
It's something that I did a lot of playing when I was young, and probably the first half of my life, I did a lot of performing and teaching, and I just got to the point where I wanted to do other things.
Right.
It's an all-consuming pursuit.
The oboe is?
Yeah, or right. Just in music in general.
Right.
If you, as a performer, and that was the kind of performer I was.
So so it was all or nothing sort of
right,
thing.
Exactly. Right, exactly.
How did you get into playing the oboe?
Well, I started very young when I was in elementary school. Mm-hmm. I didn't start on the oboe, though. I started on clarinet.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got to high school, they were looking for an oboe player because there aren't very many of us. And I was recruited by my high school band director who asked me if I wanted to play. And I took it up and it was the thing for me.
Did you come from a musical family?
Yes, actually, we had a lot of music in the home. My father had a great ear. He used to play guitar, played harmonica. My mother was a piano player. She would always sing. They weren't formally trained, but it was part of our life at home. Both of my sisters were also musical. My middle sister is still in music. She's a professional trumpet player.
Oh, wow.
And does she perform in orchestras? Or?
She does. She lives in Pittsburgh. She does a lot of teaching right now, but she's played with the ballet, with the orchestra there.
Oh, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Now, you obviously have a passion for writing, for education, and a little bit of politics. Can you talk about that?
Well, it's kind of hard to... I don't know really when it started. I mean, I've always been a political person.
Okay.
I've always been very interested in politics. When I was transitioning from high school to college, this will date me so everyone knows my age, but I can remember being completely captivated by the Watergate hearings.
Mm.
And
so you're at least 30.
Yeah, exactly. But that was an eye-opening experience, just watching that gavel-to-gavel coverage and watching that whole process unfold. And people like Sam Ervin, people who understood and were just completely engaged by the Constitution, That whole process of governance was interesting to me. And then the politics that flowed from that.
Yeah.
And so I've always had an interest. My parents were they weren't overtly political, but we always talked about politics at home. My father was very conservative, so we would have some real big debates at the dinner table.
Oh, that sounds fun. It was always things like, should we have chicken or pork tonight, right? That kind of, I'm sure.
We would have some real strong conversations, especially around things like the war in Vietnam at the time.
Right. Which is an emotive subject anyway.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
Regardless of your political persuasion.
That's exactly right.
You know, and if obviously if your dad didn't agree with your opinion, it's eat your green jungle.
That's right. Or the fallback is, well, you'll understand when you're my age. But that just sort of progressed through my life. I mean, education is another, has always been a passion of mine. I've always taught on some level, no matter what I'm doing. It just sort of came, you know, as part of my life, part of my interests.
Mm-hmm. And writing, you know.
Writing, yeah. I worked in educational publishing for a number of years. I was at Scholastic.
Really? Oh.
Yeah, I used to write for Scholastic News.
Right. And do you think that being the manager of WGXE allows you to flex any of these muscles? Your writing, being involved in some way in politics, or at least the local community at the grassroots level?
Right. I think all of those things. Right. Also, the education piece. I consider what I do here to have a huge educational component. Mm-hmm. I think we have to support programmers much like you support students.
Sure.
Or teachers. Mm-hmm. in their environments and in what they're doing. But definitely, I mean, the writing. I write news every morning. That's my task.
And do you have to remain impartial when you write that?
I do my very best.
Right.
But it's hard sometimes.
It's a struggle sometimes, yeah.
Yes. I
mean, in a serious note, it must be a struggle sometimes if you haven't to write something that, you know,
absolutely.
You maybe you don't agree with or whatever, you know.
When during the time that both of my sons are out of school now, but during the time they were students in Hudson and I was covering the school district, it was tricky at times.
Yeah.
Because there's what you know. There's what you know from your personal life, and there's what you know from your reporting life, and they don't always cross.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
Lynn, I wanted to ask for your perspective as a writer and being politically interested in talking about bias. Have you noticed news becoming less biased over time, more biased? Is it the same? Has there always been an element of that since you started paying attention maybe when you were in college?
I think that there's always a bias. Mm. This idea that news is neutral or the news teller is neutral is sort of a false idea, in my opinion.
Sure.
I think everybody has their point of view. It's very subtle in some cases. It's become less subtle. Now you can self-select the news you want to read because you know who's... You can judge... Let's put it this way. You can decide where you want to get your news based on what you know about the news teller.
Yeah, your preconceived, like, how you want it told and the information you want to hear.
Right.
You know.
There's more self-selection.
Sure.
in news coverage. So if I'm of a certain belief, I will only listen to certain news channels, read certain publications.
Sure.
And
mm-hmm. I mean, I certainly am aware of that, and I feel... You know, as time goes on for me personally, I try to solicit the news from channels that I think don't have any hidden agendas. And
right.
the one that I find at the moment that I think doesn't have a hidden agenda is PBS.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you know if you watch channels like CNN or Fox or you know Al Jazeera. These sort of channels, there has to be a slant that focuses on, whether it be simply an American viewpoint or a foreign country's viewpoint, there's still a slant, you know. So I try to listen to, or watch public television, public radio, in terms of getting the news. And I think sometimes that's essential for me in order to get a balanced, or as close to a balanced point of view as I can.
Mm. Well, that's right. And what most people will dispute in a news story is the telling of the facts, recitation of the facts. But what most people don't understand is that the bias starts way before that. It's deciding what is news.
Mm. Absolutely.
What to report on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I sit in a newsroom, and coming from where I come from, in both my background and my life now, I will make certain choices that you might not. You might choose that, you might decide that some other story has a higher
priority.
Yeah. And that's where it is. That's why diversity in the newsroom is so important.
Sure.
Sure.
That's interesting. That's an interesting concept. Mm. However, we can't talk about it all night. We have to talk about you. So we need to move on to your first song that we're going to choose. and that is a song called Family by Jeff Watts.
I went to high school with Jeff.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was behind me in high school.
But he sat behind you?
No, behind me. A couple of years behind me.
Right. Did you know him? Do you know him?
Oh, yeah. I knew him as the floating timbali player in the marching band.
Ah.
Very, very talented guy, and eventually went on to become quite an accomplished jazz drummer. Right. He played with the Marsalis Brothers for years, and he's doing some things on his own right now.
Played on a Jay Leno show.
Yes.
For 3 years, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Which is a high accomplishment for anyone.
That's right. Yeah. So and he's he's from North Versailles, Pennsylvania. And
that's the reason why one of the things I was going to say is, you know, he's from your town or your area, you know. So
yeah.
So to find out that he was in your classes.
Right.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Now he has the nickname Jeff Tane Watts.
Yeah, that's after high school. I don't know where that came from. I think that was from his during his playing time.
I was reading that he was on tour in Florida with a guy called Kenny Kirkland.
Oh, right.
And the story is a bit vague because it's as if there was a part missing to it. He went by a Chieftain gas station.
Oh.
Just because you drive by a Chieftain gas station doesn't mean it means you can give somebody a nickname.
Yeah.
That something must have happened at the gas station for him to get the name Tane.
I'm sure, but so maybe it's not.
Maybe one day you'll bump into Jeff and he'll tell you the reason why.
That's right. That's the first question I'll ask.
Thank you.
That was Jeff Watts, Family. Nice choice, Lynn.
Thank you.
Great.
Now, the next item we'd like to talk about, Lynn, is a book you'd like to bring with you. And it's titled The Ghosts of Belfast by Stuart Neville. Really interesting book. I did a little research on it. It's about a former IRA hitman, Jerry Fagan, haunted by the ghosts of the 12 people he killed. And he realizes the only way these specters will give him rest is to systematically assassinate the men who gave him his orders. And Stuart Neville is a Northern Irish author. And there's also a sequel titled Collusion. But reading the summary, I thought, wow, this would be an awesome book to read.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite surprised that it's not surprised it's a book you chose, but, you know, the area of essentially is Britain and a feisty subject as the IRA.
It is. And he writes, Stuart Neville writes very, very well. It is, it's a brutal book in a lot of ways because it is about, it's the byproduct of that era, the troubles from, you know, the late 60s through even the early 90s in the North. And it's all about the consequences of your actions. The central character in the book is a very disturbed person. He killed a lot of people.
As part of the IRA, as a member of the IRA.
Exactly.
And IRA being the Irish Republican Army.
Right. And he's trying to make up for what he did by seeking revenge for all those people that he killed. So he's going out and he targets the people who gave him the orders.
Yeah, I think it's the people who went on to have economically prevalent lives in terms of, you know, living a good life, in inverted commas.
Right.
And reaping rewards from the troubles.
Right.
And who gave him the orders to kill people, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And they have political power, they have economic power, and he's left with, he sees these people, they're ghosts, and they're with him literally all the time. And as he revenges their deaths, they disappear.
Yeah, and it's, you know, initially I thought the story must be like The Departed, where you have a Leonardo DiCaprio character and Matt Damon, and it's just a lot of cool gunfighting and vengeance and stuff. But it's far more touching than that. And what I've kind of noticed is a lot of the art and writing about the conflict between Northern and Southern Ireland is far more emotionally charged and I think touching than a lot of the stuff that we dramatize in the United States. For example, some of the people that he's killed, some of these ghosts, it's not like other hitmen. It's a woman, a child,
a baby. Yeah.
You know, these aren't combatants by any means. And I think it touches on the unfortunate truth that sometimes gets lost, that a lot of times it is these bystanders or innocent people that are caught up in this conflict.
Well, that's one of the things about, you know, the conflict and the troubles in Ireland, is that a lot of people who were killed were bystanders, as you say, innocent people. People killed in, maybe, for example, standing in a bar having a drink.
Right.
When a bomb goes off. Or,
yeah. Right.
You know, people walking down the street and are, you know, killed by shrapnel from a car bomb.
Right.
Stuff like that, you know. And these people, you know, when you're talking about writers from Britain and from Ireland, you do get the raw realities that come through firmly in the book, you know.
Well, and it's also, it shows how complex of an issue it is and was. There's the political aspect to what was happening, but then there's also the thuggery, you know, the criminal activity that was fed and supported by some of this behavior. It wasn't pure political action on the part of a lot of people.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, the drug trade was involved. All kinds of illegal activity flowed from this, the, you know, the chaos that ensued.
It reminded me a lot of the movies I saw growing up, like Patriot Games or The Devil's Own, both with Harrison Ford, but about the conflict in Ireland seeping its way into, you know, aspects of America or in a variety.
Yeah, people seeking refuge. And
Then it follows them here.
Right.
The one with Brad Pitt in it.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But hopefully things seem to have quieted down. I hope that there's peace over there and resolution. And
well, from a Scottish perspective, I don't think you'll ever find true peace in an area such as religious conflict, religious divide, and it's just simply the way it is. You'll never truly have a complete subsidence of animosity and violence.
Right.
That's just an unfortunate circumstance. You know, when Britain invaded, if you like, Northern Ireland as a nation, you know, the very fact that they did that illustrates that you'll never have peace, because most people in Ireland see Britain coming into their shores
right.
as an invasion of their land.
Oh yeah.
So you'll never ever have a total peace in that respect.
Right. They feel they're living in an occupied land.
Yeah. Talking of frustration, your next song, Lynn, Fight the Power by Public Enemy.
Right.
Could you talk about that?
We were living in Brooklyn during the period of time that this album came out. Public Enemy was, I guess, probably one of the first mainstream groups of rappers, and they were always very political in their message.
Mm-hmm.
That was during the time my son was born.
Right.
So we had this album, Fear of a Black Planet, and it was something that we like to listen to, but the personal connection that I have to it is that when Bryce was born, he was a very stubborn sleeper, mm-hmm. and we would have to walk him around to get him to go to sleep. Huh. And
he was fighting the power.
Yeah, he was fighting the power, but this was what put him to sleep.
Wow.
This album.
So I don't want to cheapen the message, because but my personal connection is a very dear one, aside from the fact that I love this kind of in your face, very overtly and very aggressively political message.
And how has Bryce turned out? Is he a quiet guy? Is he an aggressive guy?
No, he's a pretty mellow guy, yeah, I think, overall. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned that album there, Fear of a Black Planet. It's subsequently in 2005, it was selected for preservation in the Library of Congress.
Yeah.
Such was its influence on American psyche, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Yeah.
Great
very
band.
Very powerful thing.
I mean, you actually, you know, delve into who Public Enemy are and what they stand for and what they've contributed to R&B or rap hip hop music.
Right.
It's very significant.
Mm-hmm. They are two superstars in the sense that they started something and they had a great influence. And
So a very influential band,
mm-hmm.
And a very influential band to the culture. The Black American culture,
mm-hmm.
and for that reason, I think it's a great choice that you've picked. Fight the Power. Shall we hear it?
Yes.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
No.
You're listening to WGXE Accra on 90.7 FM. You can find us on Facebook also by searching Catskill Cabin Conversations. That song was Fight the Power by Public Enemy. Lynn, I can just see you rhythmically shaking Bryce to that song.
Rocking him to sleep.
That's right.
Yeah, come on, fight the power. Fight the power.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, well, I was kind of desperate in those days. You know, they tell you, you sleep when your baby sleeps, but they never tell you what you do when your baby doesn't sleep.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, so you're desperate.
Now, Lynn, the next item we'd like to talk about is socks and boots. And, you know, I like to hike. And socks and boots are really important to, you know, staying comfortable, even preventing injuries if you don't have the right footwear.
That's right.
If you're out in the woods, if you're hiking, you can get blisters, and the blisters can change the way you walk because you're, you know, trying to avoid that discomfort, and that'll start to work its way up into your feet and your ankles and your knees and your hips and all sorts of crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any other particular reason why you'd like to bring socks and boots? Any particular socks and boots?
Well, I have a very nice... I'm sort of envisioning a winter... cabin thing.
Yeah.
So
winter wonderland.
So, yeah, warm woolen socks. I have a very nice old pair that I've worn for years. Nice worn in, but of course they do not, you know, they're just as good today as they were 10 years ago.
Nice.
Have you had to darn them yet?
No. Oh, actually, I've been pretty lucky. Yeah.
Had to what them?
Darn them.
What does that mean? What is darning?
Sew holes in them or mend them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. They've felted a little through washing.
Right.
So they're actually a little stronger than they were originally.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so that's what I was thinking. Because I hate to have my feet cold and wet.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. You know, when my feet get warm, I get really itchy toes and I can't be in bed when my feet are warm. I have to put them outside the bed. So I like my feet to be cold.
Oh, really? So you feel kind of claustrophobic when they're hot?
Just uncomfortable.
Ah, interesting. So
yeah, but I know what you mean, you know.
Right.
Like when your feet are cozy without being overly warm, it's
right.
A good feeling.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
So you need to have a good pair of socks, a good pair of shoes.
Absolutely.
Or boots, rather, when you're in the cabin to feel secure.
Right. That's right. Nice, warm, cozy. And here again, you don't have to worry about walking around. You're dependent on being mobile on your feet when you're in a cabin. You have to be able to get out, pick up the wood, go get the water.
Yeah, as Mike was saying earlier, you know, if you're in a cabin on your own and you're there and you go over on your ankle, this is not a good situation to be in.
Sure.
That's right.
So
you're cooked.
Instead of your dinner, which you could have heated up, getting the firewood that you would have gotten before.
That's right.
Destroying your ankle.
Now, the next item that you'd like to take, Lynn, not surprisingly, is a radio.
I love the radio.
Really? Being the manager of a radio station.
True, that's a relief. Imagine if Lynn was like, I cannot stand radio. I can't get away from radio soon.
And this predates my involvement with the radio station. I grew up listening to radio. You know, under the covers at night.
Hmm.
That was one of the best memories of my childhood, was listening to baseball games.
Yeah.
On the radio with my dad.
I remember when I was growing up, at nighttime we'd lie in bed and listen to a guy, Tom Ferry, and he would play like requests for people, you know, love songs for people, you know. A woman, a girl, maybe a 15-year-old, her boyfriend had left her. Can you play this song?
Oh, I know.
So I lay in bed listening to that sometimes.
Yeah. Or but Larry King late at night.
Yeah.
In later years, you know, when he was actually
good.
A real. When he was actually a real interviewer.
Right.
Sure.
And on the radio, yeah.
I'm curious, what kind of radio did you have that you you know, were able to snuggle under the covers with it and stuff?
I had a little transistor radio with an ear plug, you know, that I could listen one-sided, sort of like an earbud, but, you know, only on one side, and I would listen at night.
A transistor radio. That's what they called them in Scotland, was a tranny.
Oh my.
So we all had trannies in Scotland when I was growing up. Guys would take the tranny with them to the radio, the soccer games, you know.
Oh yeah.
All these big hard men standing next to trannies.
Well, that would happen too with baseball games and football games. They'd listen to the play-by-play as they watched the baseball game.
Oh, the other thing you'd be calling would be a wireless.
Mm-hmm.
You'd call them a wireless, you know.
Yeah.
But what you could take with you is a wind-up radio. You get wind-up radios.
Right.
With the
crank kind.
The crank for when you're maybe caught up in a power outage. You can still listen to the radio,
right.
You know.
Right.
I remember years ago when I was playing in bands when I was like 17, guys would bring in their amps and their amplifiers and their big speakers to for their guitars and the basses and stuff. And for some reason, they could pick up radio station. When the radio station they could pick up on the airwaves was Radio Luxembourg, which I found was quite interesting, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's just one of the memories. Now, do you know who one of the main guys was who created the radio?
Marconi.
Good. Well done. So it was Marconi, and there was another couple of guys who had claim to fame to have created the radio. Tesla, Oliver Lodge, Heinrich Hertz, these guys as well.
Right.
But one other little piece of information, I don't know if you know this. Do you know who Marconi's great grandfather was?
No.
Do you know, Mike?
I don't know.
John Jameson, founder of the Jameson Irish Whiskey.
No, really?
Yeah, you are, yeah.
Whoa.
So I didn't know. I just found out last night. So
that
just
is
a little
very
bit
cool.
of information.
You would never associate those two things.
So Marconi and Jameson. So you
That's
can
right.
sit at night, listen to the radio, be a wee dram, the two go together.
And perfect. You know, Lynn, your next song is a adagio from the D minor concerto for oboe by Alessandro Marcello. And I was listening to this, and it actually reminded me of a song written within the past few years by a group called Marconi Union. And they're a more contemporary, create like a techno kind of music. But they created a song called Weightless. And adagio from the D minor concerto reminded me of that because it doesn't seem to have a particular melody or anything that repeats. It's just this like ebbing and flowing melody that kind of meanders along. And that's what this Weightless song is like. And interestingly, this Weightless was written in collaboration with the British Academy of Sound Therapy, and supposedly through studies shows that it will reduce people's anxiety, however they measure that, by 65%. It'll bring a subject's resting pulse rate to 35% of their usual resting rate.
Wow.
And they actually tell people don't listen to it while you're driving because the studies have shown it'll put you to sleep.
That's a song you should have been playing for Bryce years ago. Not Fight the Power.
Weightless. Get him a little transistor radio.
That's right.
Under the covers, there you go. Wee Jamesons, there you go, son.
So, and you know, I was curious. Do you listen to classical music in the car? And why this song?
Well, this I think is one of the most beautiful things ever written. This is, and the entire concerto is really beautiful. This composer isn't widely known or played these days, with the exception of this concerto. But as an oboist, this is one of those pieces that everyone studies and you know, will often perform. You can perform it in a recital setting, or in this case, this is being you have a chamber orchestra playing with the oboist out front. But I thought about playing this for my senior recital in school, but I chose some other things instead. But this is a beautiful, beautiful piece.
You're listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM. Good choice, Lynn.
Thank you.
Very, very mellow, calming, beautiful piece of music.
Actually. Oh, thank you. So. Yeah.
Lynn, another item you would like to bring is a journal. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our guests bring journals. I didn't know that it was such an
important
prevalent
item.
Yeah, prevalent hobby. So many people do you regularly write in a journal?
I do, not as much as I used to. I used to do it pretty regularly, but I my schedule and sort of my my whole orientation has changed a little bit since coming to work at the radio station. I would spend the good portion of the day before I started working here writing. And, you know, whether it be on the computer or by hand and keeping track of things in a journal, I don't do that as much anymore.
What do you enjoy most about it?
About journaling?
Sure.
I enjoy being able to look back, and I'm always surprised at the difference between what I think I will remember at the time versus what I read and then remember later.
Oh.
Because you do have this sort of false idea that, sure, I'll remember this.
Right.
This, how could I forget moment?
Or your interpretation of what actually happened in a particular time changes.
Exactly. Exactly.
You remember what you want to remember, don't you?
Right, right. And also just from the self-reflective side is understanding how you perceive and process the world. Right. And how it changes over time.
That's interesting. So being in the cabin then and being alone with your thoughts will give you that chance to creatively write and put your thoughts and feelings on paper.
Right. And also, I love to read. I mean, that was in your question about what to bring. I think originally I gave you that I'd bring like three different books.
Yeah, you can't.
Different categories.
You can't get by as that easily, Lynn.
Well,
you know,
I'll tell you why.
You know,
though.
We say bring four items, and you're like a batch of books. You know, that doesn't work.
But see, that's because that's what I would love. That's my ideal, is to be able to be locked up for a period of time and just read two or three books simultaneously.
See, you can commit a crime and go to jail. You could do that, you know.
Yeah, really. Why didn't I think of that?
Hey, I've been really curious. I wanted to get back to your time at Carnegie Mellon.
Uh-huh.
It's such a prestigious university. How did you apply? what was your experience like?
Well, my father went to Carnegie Mellon, so I already knew.
Ego yen?
No. We're but that's how I knew about it. And I guess I didn't really think about it as being such a prestigious school because it was, you know, he went there. And but as a fine arts student, I had to be accepted academically. But then I also had to audition and be accepted in the music department.
So your performance.
So you got in on your own merits then?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But maybe, as you say, though, the fact that your father went there kind of took away a lot of your fears and you know, of ideas of what it may have been that may have affected your ability to play, or, you know, had he not been there, you know.
Or to think that it wasn't possible to do.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I was very, very fortunate. I went to a public school system that had a tremendous music program. Mm. And the people who taught were very, very skilled. And there were a number of people from Carnegie Mellon that were part of the faculty. Also Duquesne University, which has a big music school that's in Pittsburgh as well. Mm. So that was always, they always emphasized your capacity. They valued your capacity to reach that level. You know,
sure,
they pushed you, and the expectation was high.
Which prepared you for
exactly
any interview situation or
right
audition
right
for the university.
Yeah. But it was, I mean, going to school there was a very intense experience. I think it's a little bit more student-friendly now than it used to be. But when I was there, it was pretty intense.
Yeah. You know, speaking about music, I think we should get to our final song.
Sure. Our final song is You Are My Sunshine by Bing Crosby.
This particular one's sung by Bing Crosby.
Yeah, because it's been sung by a lot of people.
And it's written by Jimmy Davis and Charles Mitchell. Although some people say it was originally written by Oliver Hood, it came out around 1939, mm-hmm. They say. And I remember it from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah, so do I. Yeah,
sure.
And that's, you know, that Great Depression era kind of piece. And what is it that you like about this song, Lynn?
Well, this was a song my mother used to sing.
Oh.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's this version. There's also the Johnny Cash version, mm-hmm. which is very good. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that's, I remember this because of her.
Sure. And is there a reason you like the Bing Crosby version more than others? Or?
No, I just like it with the orchestra. It's kind of...
So when you say your mom sang it, did she, like, rock you to sleep?
Oh, yeah. 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 It was her little... Yeah, she had her whole little repertoire that she would do, but she would, yeah.
So let me get this straight. Your mom rocked you to sleep with You Are My Sunshine.
Right.
And you were influenced greatly by that and chose Feel the Power to rock your kids to sleep.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait a minute.
I'm my own woman.
Hey, I looked up Bing Crosby, and really interesting guy. Yank Magazine said that he was had done the most for American GI morale during World War II than any other artist.
Oh, is that right?
And I always think of him as, you know, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. You know, I think of that song.
The road movies with Bob Hope.
Yes, I don't know those.
Yeah.
I don't know those.
Well, I'm currently reading a book at the moment, and it's the biography of Oliver Hardy. And just coincidentally, there was a good two or three pages that I was reading last night, and it was about how Babe, that was Oliver Hardy's nickname, Babe Hardy, was a very keen and very good golfer.
Hmm.
And one of his golfing partners and good friend was Bing Crosby. They both played golf extensively together. So that was just a coincidence as I was, last night as I was preparing to come on to the show.
The other night, dear, as I lay sleeping, I dreamed I held you in my arms. When I awoke, dear, I was mistaken, and I hung my head and cried. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away. Told me once, dear, that you really loved me, and no one else could come between. But now you've left me, and you love another. You have shattered all my dreams. You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away.
That was Bing Crosby singing You Are My Sunshine. A nice way to wrap up the show, I think.
That was very nice.
A few more interesting things about Bing Crosby. He always wanted to record his performances and then edit them so that, you know, he could get it just perfect. They did a lot of live shows in around the 1930s and 40s, and you know, wanting to record, the studios wouldn't let him because they didn't have the technology yet for quality recordings. They only wanted live shows so that it could go straight from the mic to the TV. So when he was in Europe, he did some research and ended up creating a Crosby Research Foundation, it was called, and they pioneered a lot of the recording techniques and even like laugh tracks. That came from him, the idea of having a laugh track and sound effects and things in a production. And also, he is a descendant of William Brewster, the minister that came to Plymouth on the Mayflower, one of the pilgrims. And I'm a descendant of William Brewster, so I'm distantly related to Bing Crosby. How fancy.
Now, how posh.
years ago in the 70s, there was a very famous, the most famous alcoholic company and a beer company in Scotland is called Tennent's, and they did an advert in the 70s, and Bing Crosby was in the advert. I don't know how they managed to get him in this Scottish advert, but Bing Crosby was in this Tennent's Lager advert, strange as it is. So yeah,
wow,
that's my first remembrance of Bing Crosby. Strange. Anyway, we're come to the end of the show. Lynn, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, this has been fun.
You know, I say this to most guests, but we could easily talk for another good 45, 50 minutes,
yeah,
you know,
mm-hmm.
About all different things. But unfortunately, we've only got an hour. but before we go, we would like to ask you one final question.
Okay.
Mike? How do you take your coffee?
Milk and sugar.
Nice.
Yeah. Regular.
Regular. How many sugars?
One.
One. Now what kind of coffee do you like?
I like a stronger brew.
Good girl.
French or Sumatran.
Now she's talking my language.
And I have you experienced cold brewed iced coffee? Have you done that?
I have tasted.
Yeah.
I make my own ice coffee.
Well, that's how I do it in the summertime, and it's hard to go back to the hot stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
It's really good.
I just make a really strong batch, and then I just put half of it, put the sugar in, and
there you go.
You get the sugar going, and then I put it in the fridge,
mm-hmm.
and it's just beautiful.
Mm. Yeah, I know.
It's right. It is hard to go back, you know. And Well, Lynn, thank you very much for coming
you.
On.
It was lots of fun.
It's been a pleasure. And have a very nice Christmas when it comes
you.
Up, because it's around the corner.
You too.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thanks.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Lynn Sloniker, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC 90.7 FM. Special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from the band White for the theme music, and to everyone at WGXC. Thanks.